Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East. Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live from Montana this week. Last night was the 96th Academy Awards show, and while you might have missed it, there was one clear winner. No, not Oppenheimer. It was sanctimonious leftists for their lead role in pretending they are better than you. Several people shared in this achievement. Winner number one, Jimmy Kimmel. For the fourth time, Kimmel hosted the Oscars before an adoring crowd of Hollywood stars who laughed and curried favor with the man who wore blackface so many times he's second only to Justin Trudeau in his fondness for the practice. Yes, some of the very same celebrities who wanted you to believe they were horrified after yours truly said in 2018 that people used to don dark makeup in order to imitate well-known black celebrities and it wasn't a big deal, absolutely ate up the performance by Hollywood darling Mr. Kimmel, whose blackface costumes included his oft-repeated bit as basketball star Karl Malone.
Now, Karl Malone never seen no flying saucer himself, but if he do, that's going to be a spooky time.
And let's not forget Oprah in a fat suit.
15 minutes a day is all you need to get your heart rate up to where.
Please, Miss Oprah, you're crushing my. Sorry, Miss Oprah.
In truth, the Academy Awards show, though it's since gone on to lecture us incessantly about the importance of racial equity, has long been a promoter of celebrity blackface. The 2012 Oscars ceremony featured actor Billy Crystal in blackface, announcing a Best Picture nominee.
Billy, is Biebs the young Sinatra or my nuts?
Oh, Sammy, stop it.
You're my nuts.
This guy.
Peace out. All right, have fun storming if you're.
All right, good luck, Bob.
Just a few years before that, Robert Downey Jr. was honored with a Best Supporting Actor nomination for the film Tropic Thunder, in which Downey Jr. famously wore, you guessed it, blackface, while donning an afro and attending, quote, Ebonics vocal training. He won last night for Oppenheimer. Congrats. Obviously, Kimmel's love of blackface was not a deal breaker for ABC, which already employs him as a late night host, and which, in addition to its many blackface awards shows, also produced and promoted many shows and stars in blackface. It appears the real sin with blackface, you see, is talking about how standards on it have changed, not actually wearing it. You can still win Oscars and host the Oscars after doing that. Winner number two of the Sanctimonious Leftists Pretending They Are Better Than You award, Robert De Niro. Congratulations, sir. Another Oscar for the iconic actor who, now 80, appeared on Bill Maher over the weekend and had some choice words about Donald Trump.
The guy is a total monster. And anybody, I don't understand it. I guess they get behind that kind of logic. They want to fuck with people, screw them, because they're unhappy about something. I never play him as an actor because I can't see any good in him. Nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing redeemable in him. He's a sociopathic, psychopathic, malignant narcissist. Dude. He's got to be stopped.
Wouldn't ever play someone that despicable. And who could blame him? That could be tough for an actor to play such a hateful, hateful man. Someone like, I don't know, like Bernie Madoff, say. A guy who stole $65 billion from nuns and Holocaust survivors like Elie Wiesel and was sentenced to 150 years in prison. Who would play him?
There are no investments.
What are you talking about? Of course there are investments.
I made them up.
They're on every statement.
I made them up.
I've seen the trades.
They're fake. All fake. Basically just a big Ponzi scheme.
Oh. Well, that was white collar. Maybe he draws the line at the really bad criminals. Oh. that's right. Jimmy Conway from Goodfellas, a character based on real-life mobster Jimmy Burke, who, according to mobster Henry Hill, really did whack a guy for an insult about shoe shining and then finished him off in the trunk of the car when they realized he wasn't quite dead.
No.
Still alive.
No.
Fucking piece of shit. God. Don't look at me. Look at my fucking eyes. God.
But De Niro doesn't want to play someone truly evil, you see. At least not a certain someone. Maybe Jimmy was a Democrat. By the way, De Niro is also very upset that Donald Trump is an alleged racist. Wonder if he pulled Jimmy Kimmel aside last night and asked him to atone for his blackface-loving past. Our final Oscar for sanctimonious leftists pretending they are better than you is a dark horse contender when you consider he's not even an actor. George Stephanopoulos. Yes, another ABC-er. The lifelong Democrat took to his Sunday show yesterday and decided to really press Republican and Trump endorser Nancy Mace on how on earth she can support a guy who's been found liable of sexual assault, especially when, as he pointed out to Mace, she is a rape survivor. It's such an opportunity when you can use a woman's rape against her. Watch.
Our next guest is South Carolina Congresswoman Nancy Mace, a Donald Trump supporter who gave candid and courageous testimony about her own experience as a rape victim weeks before launching her run for Congress in 2019.
From some of us who've been raped, it can take 25 years to get up the courage and talk about being a victim of rape.
How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
It's a shame that you will never feel, George, and I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting.
I'm not trying to shame you.
You are.
I'm just asking.
And I find it offensive, and this is why women won't come forward.
Women won't come forward because they're defamed by those who perpetrate rape.
Today.
I'm asking you a very simple question.
You're shaming me for my political choices.
I'm asking you a question about why you endorse someone who's been found liable for rape.
It was not a criminal court.
And by the way,
she joked about the judgment and what she was going to do with all that money, and I find that offensive.
How is the question asking you about a presidential candidate who's
you're
been
asking a rape victim.
And
you're
courageously talked about
because
that.
I've been raped. I think that's disgusting.
No, I'm questioning your political choices because you're supporting someone who's been found liable for rape.
Exactly,
you're not answering
the
question.
I think it's disgusting.
Well, you're welcome to say that, but you also have to answer the question.
If you want to defend a woman who made a mockery out of rape, then you go ahead and do that. I'm not going to do that.
Well, actually, what you're doing is defending a man who's been found liable for rape. I don't understand how you can do that. The judge affirmed that it was, in fact, rape. Donald Trump was found to have committed rape. That's just a fact. We'll let the viewers decide about that. Let's talk about January 6th.
What a kind, sensitive man who clearly cares deeply about women and their sexual assault allegations. Thanks for being an ally, George. I see how concerned you are that victims might not come forward if they are publicly attacked by their rapist or his defenders. To be sure, that is a very real concern. It happens all the time, which you know, because you invented it. Remember? When you created a whole command center designed to smear Bill Clinton's sexual assault and rape accusers so you could elevate him right into the presidency. The attorney representing many of Bill's accusers, and there were many, George, Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, Paula Jones, Jennifer Flowers, to name just a few, said you and James Carville, at Hillary Clinton's direction, formed a so-called war room whose purpose was, quote, to destroy any woman that would challenge Bill Clinton. You know the war room. They made a whole movie about it.
George Stephanopoulos, I'm director of communications.
Bush was on the defensive. Another good night for Bill Clinton. Three debates, three wins.
I guarantee you that if you do this, you'll never work in Democratic politics again.
Such a tough guy. This attorney points out that you don't like to talk about this particular behavior, George. Maybe that's why you skipped it in your discussion with Nancy Mace. But as you know, private detectives were hired. The women say they were threatened. and they were publicly shamed by you and your well-funded team. Did you worry then that this behavior might shame victims from coming forward? You admitted in your own memoir that Hillary Clinton told you about one accuser, quote, "We have to destroy her story." Did you object? Did you say, "That's shaming"? No. In fact, you later described yourself as Bill Clinton's, quote, "enabler." But sir, how could you have enabled and defended a man like this, accused by multiple women of sexual assault, rape, and harassment? Which brings us to Paula Jones. You were Clinton's attack dog when Jones came forward claiming Bill Clinton had exposed himself to her, that when he was governor of Arkansas, he summoned her through state troopers to a Little Rock, Arkansas hotel room and took out his penis, a charge Clinton denies, just as Trump denies E. Jean Carroll's allegations against him. What do you think he wanted done with that thing, George? Just a little show and tell? Jones was poor, a graduate of secretarial school, and worked for the state. She had no power, no connections, and he was the sitting governor. She didn't go to Columbia and Oxford and become a Rhodes Scholar like you, George. She was a nothing to you. Your buddy Carville immediately went after Ms. Jones, infamously saying, "If you drag a $100 bill through a trailer park, you never know what you'll find." And you? Did you defend Paula Jones, saying, "We don't shame accusers. That's wrong"? No. You compared Jones to Tanya Harding as, quoting here from the New York Times, "just another woman seeking cash for telling a tabloid tale." Fire up that war room, George, and destroy her. Bill Clinton would ultimately pay Paula Jones almost $1 million to settle her civil suit against him. And you remained Team Clinton all the way, to say nothing of Juanita Broderick's rape allegation or Kathleen Willey's allegations and more. But now you, quote, "don't understand how Nancy Mace can support a man found liable for sexual assault of one woman 30 years ago in a civil trial in which the burden of proof is just 51% likely." My God, how did anyone at ABC think this was a good line of inquiry for George Stephanopoulos, of all people, to pursue? And one need look no further than the kickoff of your interview to see you haven't changed, George. Who told you that the thing to do with a rape survivor is to casually begin the interview with her own testimonial about her rape and then immediately attack her? Most people showing this whole exchange that happened on your show on Sunday are not showing the fact that you started the whole thing by bringing up Mace's rape when she was just 16 years old. They're making it look like Nancy Mace brought it up to deflect your question. In fact, you shoved it in her face and demanded that she explain how she could still support Trump. How dare you? She was right. You were out of line. You were offensive. Especially when the other guy, you know, your guy, Joe Biden, has been accused of rape as well, George. Trust me, I know. I interviewed his alleged victim. Maybe you missed it, because ABC, where you are and were the chief political correspondent, was the only network not to acknowledge or run a single soundbite from our blockbuster interview when it hit and made international headlines. I guess Tara Reid to you didn't matter. Like Tanya Harding and Paula Jones, just another wrong side of the tracks woman, easily dismissed from you and your ivory tower, George. And you did ignore her. And then you got rewarded with an exclusive sit-down with Joe Biden, whom you undoubtedly went on to vote for. How could you? Yes, hypocrisy is alive and well amongst these sanctimonious leftists. From Kimmel to De Niro to Stephanopoulos, they want you to believe they're better than you, more virtuous, more decent. But we all know the truth. They lie. They sin. They do the very things they accuse you of and the things they say they would never do. Evil things. Like try to destroy people based on feigned outrage from which they spare their own side. Or playing politics with a woman's rape. The GOP is capable of hypocrisy too, to be sure. But this weekend, these leftists, best performance in a leading role, bar none. Joining me now, Andrew Klavan. He's the host of The Daily Wire's The Andrew Klavan Show and the author of the recently released book, The House of Love and Death. Andrew, great to have you here. What do you make of my awards show?
Well, first of all, great to see you, Megan. And I thought that was a fantastic opening. I thought you went a little easy on George Stephanopoulos, to be honest with you. Not only did he do everything that you said he did, but he was hired by ABC with that as his background. He has no journalistic background. He was hired strictly for what he did for Clinton, which was what he called staunching bimbo eruptions. Bimbos being women who had been assaulted or claimed very plausibly to have been assaulted by Bill Clinton, whom he shut up. And basically, you showed that wonderful clip that I've shown on my show, too, is of him threatening a journalist with destroying her career if she should bring that up. He not only did that. Recently, we got from the Veritas, Project Veritas people, we got that clip of ABC anchorwoman Amy Robach, I think her name was, saying that ABC had all the news on Jeffrey Epstein, mm-hmm. including his associations with Bill Clinton, and spiked it. The ABC claimed that Stephanopoulos had absolutely nothing to do with that decision, but I don't see how that's possible, seeing as he was essentially in charge of what went out as ABC News. He's also a man who attended a gala honoring Jeffrey Epstein after he was convicted of child trafficking, of sex trafficking. So he's a guy who's just drenched in this stuff. And the fact that there is no scandal that blows back on him, just the stuff that you said right there, that you can get canceled for what you said, as you pointed out, for you making a perfectly true remark about blackface having historical context, that you can get canceled for that. But you can't get canceled for a career in shaming and silencing women with plausible accusations of rape against your candidate. I mean, it would be shocking if we didn't know that that's the world we're living in, if we didn't understand that what is called the resistance is, in fact, an incredible wall of power in communications, in politics, in academia. And George Stephanopoulos is kind of the poster child for that. He is completely yes. untouched. Yeah.
To the point, Andrew, where his hubris and self-delusion have grown so large that he thinks he can cross-examine an actual rape survivor on how she could get behind a presidential candidate accused of rape. How did somebody not stop him at ABC and say, George, you're not it?
I was sorry, and I don't blame her. I thought I would have been thrown off too by that kind of questioning. I was sorry that Nancy didn't have the information that you just had.
I know.
To come back
me too.
On
she did great, because, but that would have been a nicer turn.
She did absolutely great. But it is, but just on in terms of what she actually said, it is shaming to say you have a political opinion. You are a politician who made a political decision. How does that fit in with your being raped? As if somehow she were stripped of her power to make political decisions by the fact that some clown attacked her, which is incredibly shaming and incredibly an incredible act of blaming the victim for something that she had nothing to do with. How is she supposed to lose her agency, to lose her voice because somebody raped her? That's insane. And the fact that
and she has to believe everyone else. That the implication, yes. of course, Andrew, is that she must believe E. Jean Carroll. She has to,
right.
even though we've all had the chance to listen to E. Jean Carroll for 3 years now. We know that this is a political hit job, that the law was changed so she could come forward, that she herself joked about rape being sexy, and that she couldn't even remember what year this alleged rape happened in. You are completely within your mind to say, with all due respect to rape victims, I don't believe this particular one. That's okay. That you're not anti-holding rapists accountable if you don't happen to believe her. It's the left that tells us we have to believe all women.
Of course. And this was such an unfair event. I mean, the law that allowed people to go back past the sell-by date of these accusations was put in place strictly to get Trump. The fact that she was not he was not found guilty of rape by the jury. The judge just sort of announced that he believed him to be guilty of rape. And so he was never convicted of anything. And as you say, it was a civil trial, not a criminal trial. So the burden of proof was much, much lower. Of course, this is true. Criminality, acts of criminality like rape, I mean, it is one of the worst crimes you can commit. But that doesn't mean that somebody committed it. Just because you're accused of it and just because people shouted at you doesn't mean you committed it. And there's
absolutely— In front of a New York jury that hates Trump, that hates Republicans. Yeah. I mean, that hasn't been factored in at all. But I do want to spend 1 minute on what you said, because Stephanopoulos kept saying he was found liable for rape in a civil court. And finally, Mace did point out he wasn't found liable for rape. It was sexual assault. And George Stephanopoulos doubled down and said, the judge said he was found liable for rape. And just so the audience understands what actually happened in that civil case, the jury rejected the rape charge. There were at least two boxes they could have checked. Did he rape her? Did he sexually assault her? And they said yes to sexual assault, and they said no to rape. Then the judge, after the fact, in trying to explain how they got to the conclusion that he sexually assaulted but did not rape E. Jean Carroll, explained that E. Jean Carroll had given testimony that he allegedly grabbed her, put his mouth on hers, yanked down her tights, and penetrated her with his hand and then with his penis. Under New York criminal law, an assault constitutes rape only if it involves vaginal penetration by a penis. Sorry for the graphicness, but this is the story. This was the definition the jury was instructed to use in the civil case. So the jurors were saying that this sexual abuse finding necessarily implies that they believe he penetrated her with his fingers, but obviously they had some doubts about the penis rape. Sorry, again, very early in the day to be getting so graphic, but this is what a real anchor on ABC would have done and wouldn't have been so loose with the language in trying to lecture an actual rape victim who did point out there's a distinction between sexual assault and rape and was accurately trying to point out it mattered in the civil case. Once again, ABC falls down on the job.
And no matter what you think about Donald Trump, he is not being treated fairly by the law in New York or in D.C. How can somebody defend himself against an accusation when the accuser can't even remember the year? How are you supposed to say, well, you accuse me of this, but on that day I was in Baltimore, when the accuser can't even say what year she's talking about? I mean, surely some kind of specificity is required to accuse somebody of a crime so heinous. And I just think that the way that Trump is being treated has elevated him in ways that the left must not have foreseen, or they wouldn't have done it. They have just treated him so badly. And the fact that he's still walking around and still, you know, copacetic and still making jokes and things like that elevates him maybe beyond what he deserves, but still, because he's been so unfairly treated. And I just think that to pass that on to Nancy Mace, who is in fact a rape victim, when you are George Stephanopoulos, who is in fact a man who has covered up for an accused rapist and silenced apparent rape victims, alleged rape victims, it's just an incredible display of raw power by a media that is owned all by one side, which is not necessarily the leftist side. It's the corporate side. It's the deep state side, which has become the leftist side because that's what feeds the power of the government and the corporations. And I mean, I'm not sure these guys really care about the politics so much as they care about their power. And this was an incredible display of that power, as we see it all the time.
It was. In one day. You know, you got the Sunday morning show with Stephanopoulos into the evening Academy Awards broadcast with Kimmel ABC elevating, you know, the blackface Lovin Kimmel, who was speaking in Ebonics wearing an afro and like no problem. Right. It's OK with the bald head and then the fat suit. And then, OK, that's no problem for them. But they at the same time, Andrew, fired Chris Harrison, host of The Bachelor, for trying to defend one contestant on like The Bachelorette for saying, gee, I know I went to this antebellum party, you know, a couple years ago. I guess I didn't see anything wrong with it. And all he said was, are we judging her by today's standards or are we judging her by, you know, old standards, whatever. He was basically trying to say, are we being too hard on her? Got fired. Chris Harrison has to be fired by ABC. I don't know why, because he's not a committed leftist, because he's not out there more saying all the terrible things about Republicans that Jimmy Kimmel says, which was 100% his insurance card to his scandal, right? They weren't going to cancel somebody like that, was on the air every night ripping on Trump. And the Academy, as you know, at the same time, tries to cloak itself, notwithstanding celebrating Tropic Thunder and, you know, putting Billy Crystal on the Oscars in blackface. They're trying to celebrate how now you can't even get nominated for Best Picture unless you assure them that you have, oh, I wrote it down, has to be at least two of four. The lead or significant supporting actors have to be a member of a racial or an ethnic group of the Academy's choosing. At least 30% of all actors in secondary roles have to be from underrepresented groups. The main storyline has to center on women or racial or ethnic groups who are underrepresented, like LGBTQ included, and people with disabilities. You have to hit at least two of the four. So this is them saying, we get it. We're an ally, right? And I guess maybe they're trying to make up with their racist past for their racist past without ever acknowledging it.
You know, you're also leaving out Kevin Hart, which was one of the stories that really offended me. Oh, Kevin Hart, yeah. A black guy who worked to the top of one of the toughest professions to get to, comedy, show business. I mean, nobody understands what it takes to get into that top rank. His dream was to host the Oscars, and because they found some tweet making a discouraging or disparaging remark about gay people.
It was a Cowboys and Indians party with his kid.
It was, yeah. I mean, and
that was one of the things he got in trouble for.
Yeah, so he was canceled from his dream job after working to get to the place where he would be offered that job. On top of which, I hate to point this out because I don't like to play the left's game, but after putting in place all those rules that you mentioned, there, you know, it's kind of manipulable. You can kind of get away with hiring black people, what they call below the line, people who don't show up on screen, and you can then be qualified. But after all that, it was the most white Oscar I can remember. I mean, there was none of the black
so
actors.
White.
Only one black actress won for her role, and she was very good in The Holdovers. But the rest, it was all, you know, Oppenheimer, pure white cast. All of the stories that were celebrated were white, except for American Fiction, which was a very, very good movie, won for screenplay, and was a very good movie, making fun of woke white people, making fun of the fact that black people have to basically take on the roles that rich white woke people give them, or they can't make a living. I mean, if you missed American Fiction, I highly recommend it. It's a very good movie. But all it does is make fun, for the most part, all it does is make fun of white woke people forcing black people into the roles that white people want to see them in. And so the entire Oscar was just an absolute disaster for its own wokeness, which you can't help it. I mean, wokeness is such a stupid, self-contradictory, virtue signaling, wicked philosophy that if you have any heart at all, you're going to step on yourself trying to express it. I mean, it's just a philosophy that needs to be tossed out the window. The DEI of it all needs to be tossed out the window. The George Floyd worshiping, guilt mongering ideas have to be thrown out the window. All of them serve rich white people. None of them serve the actual black guy in his life or any of us in our lives. And Hollywood has just become, you know, you pointed out Robert De Niro talking about the fact that he couldn't imagine how you could play Donald Trump because there's not one inch of goodness in him. Here's a guy who's done nothing his whole career but play gangsters who will kill you as soon as look at you.
Yes, I could have kept going. Al Capone, we could go down the list. I mean, who's a real guy? I'm not talking about just the fictional characters. That's one thing. The actual real bad guy. Al Capone's reportedly killed over 200 people when he was alive. No problem playing him. But Trump, no, bridge too far.
Which shows you that this whole thing is taking place in their imagination. And because they own the media, they're never required to step out of their imagination into the real world and say, well, wait a minute, if Trump is Hitler, where are all the dead bodies? How come we never started a war while Trump was, president? They're living entirely wrapped in their own imagination. And unlike conservatives, They're not forced out of their imagination. We're forced out of our imaginations because we hear their arguments all the time. We hear their arguments in the news media. We hear it in the Hollywood. We hear it in academia. They never hear our arguments. They have no idea what we believe. They have no idea. They think we're all sort of goose-stepping around worried about whether the Little Mermaid is black or white. But in fact, the entire philosophy of conservatism, which is the philosophy of the founding of the United States, it is ignored by them because they're living in their imagination and they have built their imagination out to encompass the entire communicating world.
It's just galling, right, to watch Kimmel get out there night after night and talk about how riddance, he said to Republican viewers who don't like his stance on guns and some of these other leftist causes. I'm virtuous. I understand. Like, I've evolved with the times. And so they forget. And then you watch Stephanopoulos, like, he's a real ally, as I sarcastically said in my talking point, such an ally to women without looking back at any of his past. You know, these people, like, there's absolutely no attempt to fact check or hold these people to account. And that brings me to somebody I've been dying to bring up for several years now. If I don't bring this person up today, Abigail Finan, my assistant, is going to be upset with me while we're on the topic of blackface. Now, this woman did not wear blackface, and I actually didn't really even know very well who this person is, but she's a celebrity chef named Padma Lakshmi. And she, for some reason, decided to leave the kitchen and to get up in my grill back in 2018 on NBC when I said, you know, people used to wear blackface and it wasn't such a big thing. When did we get to the point where people found it offensive? She went off on me on Twitter, this chef, okay, saying, I pulled a couple of comments. I was ignorant, uneducated, and she lectured me that caricaturing another race perpetuates the dehumanization of people of color. So I always wondered whether Padma was going to go on Jimmy Kimmel, right? Like, would she? She's so disgusted with me saying people used to do this. Trust me. Would she draw the line on Jimmy Kimmel and his Karl Malone imitation and his Oprah blackface fat suit? Was that, you know, not to mention all the stuff he did about women. Would that be a bridge too far? Well, she has a new show out, apparently, or at least new as of last year. And she did go on Jimmy Kimmel. Shocking, I'm sure. You can't believe she would overlook his racist past to go promote her show. And here's just a clip of her talking to him about the nature of this show. Okay, watch this first one first. This is SOT 11.
It's really a political show, a cultural show, and it allows me to artistically with entertainment, say what I want to say, well, show rather than say what I would say if I got on my soapbox.
Okay, that's wonderful. She's going full political now. She's going to let her flag fly and come after people, politics, culture, everything's on the table. So I'm sure in the next bit, she must have gone after Kimmel for his long history of misogyny and racism. And we have this queued up. Let's see what happened.
And there's this big controversy about whether you ketchup or no ketchup.
Well, where do you stand on the ketchup on the pasteles?
I say no ketchup.
No ketchup.
No ketchup.
I would imagine that no ketchup is the right way to go.
You know, I don't know. It's not for me to say.
Ketchup is so divisive in so many ways.
So divisive. I have to say, for me, it's personally cathartic because it's like at the time, Andrew, to be honest, when all these people were attacking me, it was traumatic. And now you're like, they just expose themselves over time. You just realize these people are not honest. They're attacking you for your politics, not for anything you've actually said on culture or some alleged sin of the day.
You know, when this happened to you, Megan, I was talking on my show about it, and I was talking about the fact that the entire idea that they were bringing down on your head is racist per se. If your black child came to you and said he wanted to go out and on Halloween as Batman, would you tell him you can't go out as Batman because Batman is white? And similarly, if your white child came to you and said he wanted to go out as Black Panther, would you tell him that he couldn't because Black Panther was black? There's a wonderful scene in the recent movie about Jackie Robinson, the first, obviously, black baseball player in the majors, where they look out a window and they see a little white boy up at bat pretending he's Jackie Robinson. And it's incredibly moving because you realize what a tremendous impact it is to have black heroes. So now a white kid is pretending to be a black kid. He's not even thinking about the color of his skin. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. He's pretending to be Jackie Robinson because Jackie Robinson is his hero. That's obviously the goal. That is obviously what America is supposed to be like. But once you start saying, well, no, 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 just the very putting on, look, there are times when people putting on blackface has been incredibly offensive. There's no question about that.
Definitely.
But to simply isolate it without any kind of nuance, any kind of historical context, which is all you were doing, is insane. It always comes back to racism with the left because they obviously are thinking in a racist way. The best of conservatives are saying, no, look, we've got to be colorblind. There are going to be differences in the races. There are going to be conflicts. We're trying to do something that hasn't been done since ancient Rome. We're trying to build a multi-ethnic community. You know, people think that there are other multi-ethnic communities like ours, but you only have to look at a picture of foreign cities to know that's not true. This is a unique experiment. It really has not been done since the Roman Republic. And it's hard. What we're trying to do is difficult, and there are going to be bumps in the road. But if all you can do is focus on race, you're just going to end up with racism. And if you give awards and money to clowns like Ibram Kendi, who thinks that anti-racism is race, you know, racism and anti-racism are basically
Nicole
the same
Hannah
thing.
Nicole Hannah-Jones, too. Ibram, you're going to be sunk in Robin that, DiAngelo.
Yeah, you're going to be sunk in that mess forever.
Well, it's funny, because I think back, you know, at the time, and it was like you had people like Al Roker, Kathy Griffin, Don Lemon, Patton Oswalt, all of these people coming out there to rip on me, like horrified that I would talk about blackface like this, and yet oddly silent when it came out that some of their heroes like Jimmy Fallon wore it, Jimmy Kimmel, and I'm sure they would never, ever step foot on that Jimmy Kimmel set. Why would they sit across from a blackface loving host like Jim? Oh, wait, what? We have another clip? Let's watch.
Why the serious goose?
My daughter, when she was about 2 years old, she'd sometimes have a mad face on. I'd say, are you a silly goose or a serious goose?
I'm dressed as a Pattinson Bear. The swamp ass going on right now is epic.
What's trailer?
Taylor Swift and what's his face? The other guy.
Oh, Travis Kelce.
Yes,
is...
Travis Kelce.
You do the same thing that I do, except you do it with humor. I'm a huge, huge fan.
And you're leaving out, by the way, the Man Show. You forgot about the Man Show where he would go out and, you know, do degrading things to women for laughs, which was legitimately funny, some of it.
Well,
you know,
but it's like all of this. Let's talk about that, because that was co-hosted by, I think, our mutual friend, Adam Carolla. And I realize that they crossed some, you know, lines there and did some things that are, you know, pressing the boundaries for sure. But to be honest, I wasn't offended by the Man Show at the time. And like Kimmel, for sure, those are bad clips of him in the Oprah fat suit with the blackface. But there were different standards. Like most people were actually not offended. That's why he went on to get hired as the ABC host. Like, that's the point I'm really trying to make here, right? That it's like, we have had evolving standards in the country, and that's okay. And most of us on our side don't run around just knee-jerk calling people like Kimmel racist or misogynist, whatever. We're kind of like live and let live. People evolve, society changes. It all works out in the end. It is that side that is obsessed with skin color and gender and hierarchies that they are necessarily recreating. To your point, what we're trying to do is tricky and it's never been done before. And we were getting there. We were getting there. And thanks to these people, we're blowing it up right now.
Well, because they have to keep it in play. It's the only argument they have for policies that simply do not work. I mean, since FDR, but if you just want to take it since the Great Society, their policies have not improved the lives of Black people. They have slowed Black people's rise into the middle class. They have cut off, they've destroyed the Black family with their stupid policies and their misguided feminism. They've destroyed whole Black families. There are now more Black children being born out of wedlock than there were when Democrats were actually breaking them up because the Democrats were the slaveholders. So these are things that have, you know, just gone terribly wrong. And the only way they can defend this palace of money that they built, this great society, which pours money and power into the Democrat Party and into leftist causes, the only way they can defend it is by calling anybody who stands up against it racist. If you're against the welfare system, if you're against fatherlessness, families, if you're against actual crime in the streets, mostly in black neighborhoods where the black criminals hurt other black people, if you oppose those things, you must be racist. So they have to keep these accusations alive. And of course they become absurd and ridiculous because, you know, people live together. There's some hostility. There's some jokes. One of the worst things they've done, in my opinion, is stopped us from joking about one another, because joking is what friends do to one another, especially male friends. We make fun of one another. That's how we relate. And when you say that, oh, you can't make a joke about a black guy, you can't make a joke about a Jewish guy, you can't make a joke about Irish, Italian people, you're actually keeping us apart. You're not bringing us together. Teasing each other is part of, you know, it's part of what friends do. It's part of what lovers do too. So all of that stuff that, you know, they did on the Man Club was kind of funny because sex is funny. The relations between the sexes are fraught and
they
funny.
They were in on the joke. Yeah.
Right, right. And I think that killing humor, making people feel that they have to walk on eggshells before they make a joke or use a phrase or speak some words that might be taken in the wrong way, especially if they're on the right, that's what it's all about. It is about that. It's about that silence, about that fear. It has nothing to do with race because they've done nothing to help people of any race whatsoever. I mean, everything leftist touch turn to crap. I mean, everything they touch gets worse. And so they just defend it with these policies, and they're meant to silence us. And they were, you know, it worked when they hurt your career briefly. I mean, it's wonderful that you have the skill and the will to come back. But of course, they're powerful enough to hurt you if they want to.
And no, that, Andrew, I was on every newspaper and every television program in the country as a racist. That is what they did to me as a result of my one comment, truly. And then they drudged up old Media Matters nonsense about, like, me calling these guys in a gang thugs. See, that's racist too. And try to build a narrative about you to try to take you out. And thank God they didn't keep me out. But yeah, look, I wasn't the only one. They've done it to so many people and smeared them, people who haven't been able to come back, who maybe didn't have as, you know, great a foothold in their career as I did when they tried to take me down, who really struggle to get back out there. And so fuck these people. I mean, that's really where I land. Like, they can just fuck off. Like, they're terrible people, and you can see it.
They are awful people. And I'm really happy you mentioned this fact that people like you and me, because I was thrown out of Hollywood, who have established themselves to a certain degree, have a way back. We have a skill set that's been proved, and we can say to people, look, I can do this thing, and they will agree. But I know a lot of people who are just on that upward trajectory, who are just proving themselves, just getting to Broadway, just getting into the great galleries, just getting into the novel publishing business, who were quashed because they weren't quite left enough, or they said something in the Twitter crowds came after them, and there's no way back for them. And it drives them insane because they were made by God to do what they were doing. I mean, artists are not made, they are created, you know. And I think that when that is frustrated and the ambition that you have is frustrated, it drives you insane. And it's heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, I know because I'm at the Daily Wire, and the Daily Wire has a cultural, you know, agenda. I get letters every day. Can you help me? Can you help me do this? Can you help me do that? And the fact is, no, I can't. You know, I wish I could, but I can't. And it's brutal. It is brutal. And your immortal words of what they can do with themselves, I think, should be chiseled over the hall of the Academy, because really they have destroyed so much and done so little good.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier, you know, the media enablers like Stephanopoulos, who will run cover for the Bidens of the world and try to make people like Nancy Mace look like they're on the wrong side of rape, an actual rape victim. And that continued as late as this morning and will continue to, I'm sure, because that clip that we showed of Stephanopoulos with Nancy Mace is being used by the left. The left is loving that today. They're ripping on her. And again, none of them will show the fact that he brought it up. He got into the segment with her by running the clip about her rape. She didn't go there. She didn't just go, hey, I'm a rape victim, you can't ask me about Trump. And you know, give it. He set it up that way. That's why she was defensive. Of course, it's so dishonest. So here's a flavor for how they covered it this morning on Morning Joe. Watch.
It's just not offensive, and she's not shamed because she's incapable of being shamed.
Although I mean, she tried to shame E. Jean Carroll.
What we saw from Representative Mace there, it was indeed, even though she's impossible to be shamed, it was shameful, trying to twist what George Stephanopoulos did and go on the political attack, tried to hide behind something, of course, that truly terrible happened in order to defend her support of Donald Trump.
Oh, my God. That last guy, Jonathan Lemire, is the chief White House. He's the bureau chief, the White House bureau chief for Politico, which is he's supposed to be a nonpartisan person, also hosts a morning show on MSNBC. She's trying to hide behind her rape. You mean the one that was thrown in her face by Stephanopoulos? And once again, Morning Joe didn't show that that's how it was set up. It's just grossly dishonest, Andrew. And the truth is, they're influential. People will look at that and dismiss her as like, oh, she just tried to use her rape to get out of the question.
Well, you know, I think that's right. I think they've lost a lot of their credibility. You're talking about NBC, remember, that covered up Harvey Weinstein, that actually shut down Ronan Farrow's book about Harvey Weinstein in order to cover up because their Hollywood and Universal wanted to protect Harvey while they were covering up Matt Lauer's depredation of his staff. I mean, Matt Lauer was accused of sodomizing a woman while she begged him in tears not to. He was accused of taking an assistant and attacking her so badly she fainted and passed out and had to be taken to the infirmary. I mean, and they silenced all of that for years. You can't tell me they didn't know the guy was doing this in his office where he had a button that locked the door after women came in, or I should say allegedly, since he hasn't been put on trial. But still, this is they did everything they could to cover this stuff up. And now they're going to tell us that they're going to elevate George Stephanopoulos, who, again, literally his only credential for doing what he does at ABC was stopping, quote unquote, bimbo eruptions for Bill Clinton, alleged serial abuser.
Where are the rape crisis centers and women's support groups right now? Because Nancy Mace, the only thing they say that she attacked E. Jean Carroll in that segment. No, she didn't. She said, I didn't like the way she laughed about what she was going to do with Donald Trump's money after her verdict. It diminished rape victims. And she's right. A lot of people ran with, she looks like a money grubber. You know, look at her like with, I can't wait. I'm going to buy you an apartment, Rachel. You want Paris? I'll buy you Paris. That's all she said when she was trying to explain why she wasn't all that persuaded by E. Jean Carroll and didn't much appreciate the way she talked about rape. It's sexy. Can't wait to spend my money. That's all she did. But where are the women's advocates now to stand up for Nancy Mace? Because if, you know, a Bill O'Reilly or a Tucker Carlson or a Sean Hannity did this to a female rape victim who was a Democrat, right, who came on their show and tried to get up in their grill, they would be speaking out, right? But she will get no support other than from people on the right wing or who are objective on center right.
Well, this is I've always wondered this about feminism, of organizations like Now and things, why they are inherently leftist. Why do they have to be inherently leftist? So NBC is covering up for Harvey Weinstein, covering up for Matt Lauer, and then they strategically release this tape of Donald Trump, you know, doling out locker room talk about women. And that suddenly starts this movement. Women are pouring out into the streets, you know, with the pink hats and all this stuff. When Brett Kavanaugh is accused by a woman who can't even prove that she's ever met him, that he did something when they were teens, this is amazing. You know, they're storming the Capitol. But when Tara Reid says that Joe Biden threw her up against a wall and penetrated her with his fingers, not only does the New York Times wait, I think it was 20 days before they even covered it, and then bury it on the inside of paper on Easter Sunday and basically dismiss it without any kind of investigation whatsoever. But where are the same women's groups? Why are they inherently leftist? I don't understand why there is not a feminism.
I mean, honestly, I think the answer is abortion. That's their North Star. Like that's
what they always
say. If you're going to vote for abortion, they'll protect you and favor you and defend you. And if you're not, then you can go under the bus. That's what happened when Tara Reid went to Time's Up. Joe Biden's top person, Anita Dunn, his top comms person, was helping run it. And they put Tara Reid under that bus and backed up over her twice as the media came out and tried to say she was some low-life loser who had had a bankruptcy. I mean, it was absolutely disgusting what they did with her. Got to stand by. We're coming back. We got a few more minutes together. Quick break. Love talking to Andrew Klavan, and Maureen Callahan's ahead as well.
Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed-up but cheap ABC talent, George Slapanopoulos. See if you can guess which former president just posted that on Truth Social. Anyone? No? Well, thank you, President Trump. Thank you for watching. I'm surprised you're still watching. Isn't it past your jail time?
Welcome back to the Megyn Kelly Show. The Daily Wire's Andrew Klavan, host of the Andrew Klavan Show, is with me still. Andrew, he found time to take a shot at Trump. He found time to take a shot at Katie Britt. He did not find any time to make fun of Joe Biden, who's the sitting president of the United States. I guess there's just no fodder there. There's nothing to joke about.
No, he's an obsidian wall. You can't find a way to make any comments about him at all. I mean, he's only following what the news media is doing. Joe Biden got up and gave the worst State of the Union address in my lifetime. I've never seen anything as ugly and divisive as a guy getting up and comparing American citizens to Putin's invasion of Ukraine. It was insane. That's how he started his address, yeah. The screaming and the yelling. And all we've heard ever since is about Katie Britt, who I admit gave a bad speech. The response to the State of the Union is always bad. You simply are stuck there in this little room responding to the most powerful man on earth in the full pomp of his office. So it's always a bad thing. But nobody has touched the fact that this was genuinely terrible. It was mean. It was loud. It was divisive. He screamed at Americans for not being happy with his inflation-riddled economy, with his border, you know, nonsense, trying to blame the border on Republicans, which has been one of the greatest cons ever. And people aren't buying it. It's really interesting that after this full court press by the press to protect Joe Biden after that performance, the reviews, the polls on that State of the Union are still as bad as they can be. So Jimmy Kimmel, you know, this is the thing. You're not just dealing with the entertainment media, you're dealing with the news media as well. And they're kind of blended together, and they're all blended together with the corporations who are putting Dylan Mulvaney on their, you know, beer bottles. It's all one thing at this point. And I think it's on the verge of crumbling. I think people are pushing back. You can already see the tide, which had reached a peak right around the George Floyd riots. You can already see it sort of rolling back as people start to realize, you know, we're getting the information anyway. What happens is the lies hit us first, and they hit us like a wind. But then slowly through the internet, the truth comes out. And as the truth comes out, the media loses its credibility, because suddenly we see like, oh, yeah, you know, this disease did come from China. Masks don't work. The vaccine can be dangerous. You suddenly see all these lies poked holes in, and all the people who are called conspiracy theorists turn out to just be talking common sense, which does make things confusing on the one hand, because there are crazy conspiracy theorists out there. But on the other hand, it just completely eliminates any credibility this media has, whether it's Hollywood media or news media. And I think that that's what's happening. I think that they're leaking like a sieve, and I think it's helping Donald Trump, and I think it's helping people who are basically just not on board with the regime.
It's interesting you should say whether it's Hollywood media or news media, because it did in that one clip I showed when Don Lemon was on Kimmel's show. He said, "You do what I do." And that's exactly right. That's what's happened to the late night hosts. They do just become political commentators. We've talked many times. They want applause. They don't want laughs. And last night, one of the things I thought stood out about Kimmel's hosting was he didn't get it. Like, the reason Ricky Gervais did so well when he hosted those Golden Globes and just eviscerated everyone in that room is because he was making fun of them on things that we knew were true, you know, like the kind of their abuse of their own power and their self-importance, that kind of thing. And he was punching up, which is okay. What Kimmel did last night was he tried to mock people's weaknesses and like things that they had genuinely fought hard to overcome, like he did to Robert Downey Jr., who wound up being a favorite of the night. His acceptance speech, I thought, was great. He thanked his terrible childhood. That was a great line. That's probably what all of them should start with.
What all talented people, yeah.
But before he won Best Supporting Actor for Oppenheimer, Kimmel, in his opening monologue, decided to take a shot at him. Everybody knows about Robert Downey Jr.'s long history of trouble with drugs and alcohol. It's something he's, you know, no one celebrates, but he's to be given credit for overcoming. In his acceptance speech, he made it all about his wife, who he called his veterinarian, for treating like a dog like him. It was sweet. It was self-deprecating. But this is how Jimmy Kimmel addressed him in the opening monologue. Watch this.
And congratulations to Silly Ann's co-star, Robert Downey Jr., who is, this night is, this is the highest point of Robert Downey Jr.'s long and illustrious career. Well, one of the highest points. But Robert has been a, was that two on the nose or is that a drug motion you made?
Keep it moving.
But look at him. I mean, look at this guy. He's so handsome, so talented. He's won every award there is to win. Is that an acceptance speech in your pocket or do you just have a very rectangular penis?
What was that? I was just classless.
This is classless, yeah. You know, it's funny. I worked with Downey Jr.'s wife before she was his wife when she was single. And I wrote a script with her. She's the only enemy I ever made in Hollywood because I refused to do a rewrite on a script. But I really liked her and she was a highly intelligent woman. And when I read she was getting married to this guy, I made fun of her to her face. I said, you know, like, basically, this is a smart woman making a bad choice. And instead, she proved me totally wrong. She went out and she really gave that guy, turned that guy around. I mean, he walked around with her picture on his phone to keep himself from going back to the drugs. And you know how bad those habits can be, how they can destroy people. And somehow she brought him out of it. And so she deserves all the credit he gives her. And even though she was angry at me for our relationship, I salute her because she really did turn that guy around.
That's sweet. I don't like, why would you bring up, you know, the guy's drug use on his big night, rub his nose in it, repeatedly
because
double down on it, make a comment about his penis? Like, what's that about? It was like he was trying to embarrass him and it was a failure. So thumbs down on the whole thing. Okay. I've got to get this in. It's a turn. But over the weekend, as we went into the early part of the weekend, the big news was, and we've got to get to it, Joe Biden, speaking of a State of the Union, was asked about the fact that in that State of the Union, when Marjorie Taylor Greene said, say her name, about Laken Riley, the 22-year-old student who was murdered while jogging on the campus of the University of Georgia by an illegal. She said, you know, she was killed by an illegal. And Joe Biden used that term, an illegal. She was killed by an illegal. Well, he finally, I guess, realized he had to do a mea culpa about that. Listen to this. Jonathan Capehart, again, of MSNBC. Those people have lost their minds. Who would watch this program to actually subject your brain to this just insanity? But people do it. Jonathan Capehart is part of that same team. And watch this exchange, Shot 24.
Mr. President, it's great to see you again. Thank you
for
doing this.
Good to see you.
So that was one hell of a speech you gave Thursday night. I'm going to touch on three specific areas there. The first one being, you know, I noticed the look of surprise on your face when you walked into the chamber and you saw Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was priceless. You feigned shock at seeing her. But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Laken Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. It's undocumented. And look, when I spoke about the difference between Trump and me, one of the things I talked about on the border was that the way he talks about vermin, the way he talks about these people polluting the blood. I talked about what I'm not going to do, what I won't do. I'm not going to treat any of these people with disrespect. Look, they built the country. The reason our economy is growing. What? We have to control the border and more orderly flow, but I don't share his view at all.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
Mike, they built this country? They did? Yeah. Gang members like Jose Ibarra, who murdered Laken Riley, apparently for fun. The levels of disrespect and disinformation in that answer, Andrew, what do you make of it?
Well, you know, this is kind of the one thing in this administration that I do think is hitting people in the face when Mayorkas, the head of Homeland Security, gets up and in that po-faced way he has, he says, well, the border is secure. And if it's not secure, it's the Republicans' fault and we're doing everything we can. He talks in that kind of blank double talk of bureaucraties. And we see them. They can't hide them. They're coming across the border. All the cities that declare themselves sanctuary cities are now getting flooded with them and sort of saying, I'm not sure the sanctuary was such a great idea. And the Democrats are just pouring money into New York, but there's not enough money to actually take care of this incredible invasion that Biden has allowed to happen. Whereas in the last month of the Trump administration, I think something like 17 illegals were released into the country. And now it's thousands upon thousands upon thousands.
And now he's worried about hurting their feelings. He's worried about hurting the feelings
of a murderer. I mean, it's not just hurting the feelings of illegals, some of whom may be decent people running away from bad things. He's hurting the feeling of a murderer and apologizing to him on air. Can't even get the woman's name right, the victim's name right, when her mother spoke out about
this weekend, saying she was offended. She's like, she can't. She said, I have it here, but her mom said, Biden doesn't even know my child's name. If you're going to say her name, when forced to do so, at least say it the right way, say the right name. And she appeared with Trump while Biden was over there apologizing to her murderer for referring to him as an illegal. If Team Trump doesn't make that a split screen ad within the next 24 hours, they don't know what they're doing.
You know, Ben Shapiro has said this, that Trump is basically running a very moderate campaign. He's being helped by the fact that the news media won't cover him. They won't put him on the air. So we're not seeing him. He's being kept off social media. So we're not hearing his kooky rants. But every time I see him, you know, I was going to say this about the State of the Union. They concentrated on Brit because they could take her out. But Trump gave a response that was really good. And At this point, everything that Donald Trump has said about immigration, even though he puts things in this blunt, sometimes insensitive way, everything he said has turned out to be true. They're not sending their best. They are sending criminals. It is allowing people to get into the country who should not be in the country. And this sensitivity to criminals that we get from the Soros prosecutors and from Joe Biden, the sensitivity to people who commit crimes, you can't even say it's illegal to do something illegal. It masks this complete insensitivity to the victims of those crimes, which pretty soon is going to be a lot of us, because some of the people coming in are clearly hooked to terrorist organizations. So eventually the victims are going to be all of us. And I don't even understand how long people are going to tolerate this sensitivity toward the hurt feelings of criminals that masks a complete insensitivity, a coldness to the pain and suffering that is being caused to innocent people by murders, by crime, by rampant crime, by shutting down businesses with stealing. Eventually, you start to say, like, don't normal people deserve some kind of sensitivity? Don't normal people who pay the taxes, yes, who keep the world running, don't they deserve some kindness too?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I didn't see his apology for calling Lake and Riley Lincoln. I didn't see that. But he wants to apologize and take back calling this alleged gang member, per the New York Post, guy had been here illegally arrested for endangering the welfare of a child. That guy who wound up taking the life of a 22-year-old young woman who just wanted to help people as a nurse, he gets an apology. It's bass ackwards, as they say. Andrew Klavan, always a pleasure, my friend. Great to see you.
Great to see you, Megan. Thanks.
All right. When we come back, Maureen Callahan. I have so much I want to talk to her about. I do want to get her take on Stephanopoulos, but I also have got to get into what the hell happened with the Kate Middleton photo with the three kids. Remember, we talked about this on Friday? Well, we were on point because they put out this photo. You saw it, of her and the kids. All these news agencies pulled it, saying it was manipulated. We're going to get into it. Stand by.
I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM at home or anywhere you are. No car required. I do it all the time. I love the Sirius XM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more.
Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Now we're joined by Daily Mail columnist Maureen Callahan on so much that I want to get to. Maureen, I cannot wait to talk about Kate Middleton, but we've got to start with the harder news. And that is, because I know, I mean, you're always fierce when it comes to women. You are an advocate for women, not in an annoying, preachy way, but you'll go against the grain even when, you know, it might not get you the required clicks. And I've seen this in you many, many times.
Thanks, Megan.
And yet what we have today is George Stephanopoulos, of all people, pretending he is our champion as he attacks an actual rape survivor for having the nerve to endorse Donald Trump without pointing out to the audience that both of the men running for president right now have been accused of rape, both of them, that Trump was essentially found guilty of a digital rape, which the jury said was sexual assault. And that's exactly what Tara Reid accused Joe Biden of doing to her, not to mention all the other women who are involved in both of these guys. But that's where we are. And ABC lets him get away with it, as do the other media now applauding him for that segment. What do you make of it?
Oh, my God. Where to begin, Megan? Where to begin? George Stephanopoulos, who, as you noted, spearheaded The War Room, which became a famous documentary. He and James Carville and all of Clinton's lieutenants set about smearing the reputations of every single woman. And lo, there were many who came forward to say that they had been on the receiving end of either unwelcome sexual advances from Bill Clinton, or in the case of Juanita Broderick, actual rape. And Juanita Broderick's story has always, always, always stuck with me. I found her incredibly believable. And it was one detail that I believe it was a trauma room nurse came forward and said, this is how you know this woman is telling the truth. She spoke about, during the alleged assault, Bill Clinton biting her lower lip to keep her from struggling. And that this is actually something that rapists do. And it was an evocative detail, something very difficult to make up, that I've always believed her. And then on top of that, what they did to Monica Lewinsky, you know, the campaign, the sort of underground campaign that Clinton's lieutenants ran, which included, by the way, the full assent and cooperation of Hillary, was called the Nuts and Sluts attack. Nuts and sluts. And so the left, and I remember, you know, I don't know if back if you do, but the way the New York Times would cover this stuff, you know, how many Clinton apologists, people who had been in his corner from the Arkansas days, wound up going to prison for this guy? You know, it also reminds me of the way the media for months completely disregarded real boots on the ground reporting that the National Enquirer was doing about John Edwards cheating on his dying wife and getting his mistress pregnant. And the news media just completely refused to cover it until it became like you could not ignore it anymore. And so Stephanopoulos to sit in this news chair as part of ABC News as their figurehead, a guy who went after defenseless women who had no money, no power, no resources to say that they were making it up or that they were looking for a money grab, that they were, in the words of James Carville, trailer trash, is astonishing to me. And secondly, I would say no man should ever be interviewing a rape survivor about the parameters of what she's allowed to feel or how she's allowed to vote.
Right. The insensitivity of that exchange is infuriating. He started it by playing a clip of her talking about her rape when she was 16 and then immediately pivoted to attacking her with it. No one is writing an article about that today. It's outrageous that he's been allowed to get away with this. And to the contrary, the left-wing media is celebrating him and painting him as a defender of women who are raped because of E. Jean Carroll, like saying, oh, well, he pushed back that the judge said he had raped, Trump had raped her, when Mace said, actually, the jury only concluded a sexual assault. Completely ignoring the fact that Mace herself is a rape victim and that was shoved down her throat before he even kicked it off.
Oh, he completely had an agenda. And, you know, I'm sure she was like, she was lured onto the show with, you know, the false promise of telling her side of the story. It, you know, it's all so circumstantial with these major figures on the left. It reminds me of Rachel Maddow laughing with E. Jean Carroll, who was flanked by her two female lawyers who looked increasingly uncomfortable as the conversation went on, laughing about that.
Yes.
Tell me.
I had such great ideas for all the good I'm going to do with this money. First thing, Rachel, you and I are going to go shopping. Rachel, what do you want? Penthouse? It's yours, nothing. Rachel. Penthouse and France? You want France? You want to go fishing in France?
Although if me fishing in France could do something for women's rights, I would take the hit. You know, I would obviously take one for the team.
Stomach turning, Maureen.
Women's rights. These are women standing up for women's rights and laughing at what should be a really serious conversation about where we're at. You know, I just don't understand. I don't understand how something that should be completely apolitical, you know, that we still live in a world where girls and women have to fear this stuff and then fear the way that they're going to be received, whether in an actual criminal court, a court of public opinion. You know, it makes me think, I know we're probably going to touch on the Oscars a little bit, I hope, but, you know, for so many years, the industry turning a complete blind eye while they all knew what Harvey Weinstein was up to, you know, and now they're just like twisting themselves into pretzels to celebrate Barbie, you know, as this like shining feminist achievement.
I beg to differ.
It's just all hypocrisy. It's all self-serving hypocrisy. George Stephanopoulos did not do that interview in an effort to get at a larger truth or in an effort to promote the cause of women's rights and to hear what sexual assault survivors have to say. He did that interview to make himself look good. And he made himself look good. And that's what's so screwed up about the whole thing.
Here's the other thing on this same front. Today and over the weekend, Katie Britt, who gave what I openly said was a disastrous response to that State of the Union. I mean, the words, I guess, were fine, but the affectation was just too much. But now she got hit over the weekend because one of the stories she brought up about this woman who had been raped over and over by the drug cartels, and this should not happen in America. We would be upset if this happened in a third world country. It turns out this story has been told by Katie Britt before, and it didn't happen in America. It happened in Mexico, and this woman is now grown and told her the story, and she definitely implied in her remarks that this was happening in our country, current, or at least in the not too distant past. And she's been fact-checked on this. So she admits, because she has to, that this actually happened years ago. And she met this woman. She was trying to contrast when she got into office versus when Biden got into office. He undid all the immigration controls. She actually went down to the border, tried to see what was going on and learned this story. She was inartful about it to give her the benefit of the doubt. Okay, but that brings me to the AP does a fact-check on her. Headline is, Katie Britt used decades-old example of rapes in Mexico as Republican attack on Biden border policy. And they pointed out all the stuff I just told you about. And yet, you know what they didn't do in this piece, Maureen, is point out that while that story was described in a way that wasn't spot on, there are rapes happening every day in America and along the route to America because of the promise of what they'll get when they get here, including free hotel rooms and, you know, free food cards and probably jobs soon on the government dime. And the left doesn't seem to much care about any of them. And so the AP, while it really wants to fact check Katie Britt on that story, chooses not to mention anything. We went back and checked it twice about how ubiquitous the rape and sexual assault problem is of these women trying to get across the southern border by these drug cartels and their and the coyotes and those who enabled them. And in response to their correction of Katie Britt, you've got people like Katie Couric saying to the AP, thank you for reporting this. Thank you. She's very grateful that they've fact-checked Katie Britt on her one story about this one woman not actually happening in America. No one wants to talk about the fact that many women are being raped all the time down by the southern border because of these lax border policies.
Okay, there's so much to unpack here. I love this. First of all, Katie Couric, that great champion of women, that great fellow traveler of sisterhood who wrote in her memoir how she actively undermined female colleagues that she perceived to be a threat, Ashley Banfield among them. And she wasn't that sorry. It was the cost of doing business back in the day, what have you, you know? Great. Okay. Secondly, there are very few outlets that will report exactly about what you are talking about here. The what they call rape trees, which are basically rapists hang the undergarments of their victims as these kind of trophies. And they're all over the southern border. Nobody will talk about this. I don't understand the hypocrisy of the left here at all. I mean, to that earlier clip that you played of Jonathan Capehart and President Biden, you know, semantically tearing apart whether they should have called the alleged murderer of that poor woman an illegal or an undocumented person. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that like is galvanizing people who never thought for a second they would vote for Donald Trump. Take a beat and reconsider. Mm-hmm. It also reminds me, I don't know if you happen to see this, but there was this incredible piece in the New York Times over the weekend about the number of single Chinese men who are entering the United States illegally through the southern border. And without so much as raising a question as to why, what's going on here, this was an entire piece about how welcoming the community in Chinatown is and how they're trying to get them jobs and food vouchers and all of this stuff. I mean, it's an alternate universe going on. Mm-hmm. And Biden is pivoting now a little bit to the border as he did in the State of the Union because his polls are so disastrous that he has no choice. Everybody knows his heart isn't in this. You know, in New York, we see this all the time. An acquaintance of mine at a family event told me about her son getting kicked out of school. The entire school was being taken over by migrants in Brooklyn because a storm was coming. And these children who already lost so much, not just educationally, but emotionally and socially from COVID lockdowns, had to sacrifice the school, a private Catholic school that these parents pay tuition for undocumented migrants because a storm was coming. People are not—
What we really need to worry about is what we call them. I mean, like him trying to make sure we're correctly identifying them as undocumented instead of illegal is like trying to say Jeffrey Dahmer wasn't a cannibal. He was just really hungry.
He was a carnivore.
You're missing the point. I hate to tell you, but you're really missing the point. All right, we've got to go on to these other stories because they're so good. Let's talk about Kate Middleton. Unbelievable.
Yes.
So she had this surgery. They said she was going to be in the hospital for 4 weeks. We were talking on Friday about what the hell could keep somebody in the hospital for 4 weeks. Some speculated it could be, this is pure speculation, Crohn's disease, which sometimes requires resection of part of the intestine. You could potentially have a colostomy bag. This is pure speculation, but that's how severe it would have to be to keep one in the hospital that length of time. We just don't know. All they're saying it was abdominal surgery and that it wasn't cancer related. Okay, but this weekend there was a frenzy over the internet after Kate Middleton, who's only been seen once in a drive-by car situation, not her body, not her walking, released the first photo of herself and her children in months on the British Mother's Day, only to have it almost instantly, quote, killed by the major photo agencies around the world, Maureen, over, quote, manipulation and inconsistencies found with the image. A series of editing errors were found within the photo by sleuths online and by photography professionals, to the point where they were all saying, look at the many things that she's changed or somebody has changed. Like the mock-ups, you can see people do the circles online to show you the number of things that are fishy and that show like blurring where there shouldn't be blurring and an arm or a finger looking weird, to the point where today, Kate Middleton had to reply herself and do what they're never supposed to do, which is explain. And she said she was the one who, quote, conducted an experiment with editing. She says, like many photographers do. And she's sorry for any confusion. But that's all she said. Now there are more questions than answers about the Princess of Wales, her health, and what's happening here. What do you make of it, Maureen?
This is all feeling really Hitchcockian to me. Like, it's feeling like 30s film noir with a heroine in peril, and we can't quite figure out what's going on. These are such a series of unforced errors, I feel, on the part of Kensington Palace. For her to release this photo, which nobody believes she just did it unilaterally. You know, this was something that was thought about and debated and strategized, and then to have all these global news agencies say, we have to pull this picture, it's a fake. And then to have her post an apology, taking the fall for it, when if she's this sick, doesn't she just get to be this sick? I mean, that's my question. Nobody has as much built up goodwill and is pretty non-controversial as Kate Middleton is. If anybody should have taken the fall, it should have been Prince William, who was credited as the photographer. Whether Kate did it or not, she never should have had to take that fall. Then, earlier today, she was photographed in the backseat of a car alongside Prince William, but her head was turned away from the camera.
Yes, she's looking away.
And that, to me, reads as like an act of defiance. Like, now you're gonna make me, you know, present myself in public again to make up for this epic failure of public relations, and I refuse to do it. It makes you wonder who their advisors are, and because all of these things are completely of their own making, and yes. With each misstep, it's getting worse and worse, and it's only fueling all these conspiracy theories that they're actually trying to extinguish. You know, what is really wrong with Kate? Is this actually her? Is she divorcing him? Has she had a breakdown? Is she in a wheelchair? Mm-hmm. The most extreme, is she even alive? Are we looking at body doubles? Like, this is very strange. It's verging on camp. I kind of can't wait to see what they do next. But what do
I know?
What do you
I'll show you something that they just posted this morning. I don't know. My team will tell me where we got this from. But there's speculation that this photo of her is actually a grab from her British Vogue cover. Look at this, Maureen.
Oh, wow.
Look at that. Look at that.
Wow.
It looks identical. It looks exactly like the cover of British Vogue. And the question is, why? Why can't Kate Middleton just sit down and take a photo with her three children?
That's been the question for all of these weeks. You know, if she's doing as well as they say that she's doing, if it's not that big of a deal, but a big enough deal that she'll be out of the public eye until at least after Easter. And then there was also that mistake they made where it was announced she was going to appear at the Trooping of the Colour, and then Kensington Palace said, absolutely not. And that's June 8th, I believe, which is well after Easter. It does make one wonder, why can't she simply sit for a still photograph in an era of, you know, soft focus, retouching, everybody's got those filters on their phones. Why not?
Totally. You can sit and have a photograph with your children. I mean, most of us, you know, you can do it even when you look your absolute worst, like when you just had 9 months of pregnancy weight on you and have the new baby and you can do it. Why wouldn't she do it? What's the problem? I don't know what they're trying to cover up. That's my real question, is like, all of this is toward what end? What's wrong with her that she can't be on camera, even for a photo with her children, like hiding her, you know, hiding her body? You know, why would it have to be photoshopped in? Like, it looks to me like maybe the four of them weren't even there. Maybe she wasn't there and they photoshopped her in. I don't know what happened, but it is a 5-alarm fire when all the news agencies say, don't run this. It was a hard stop put on the airing of this photograph by the AP, Reuters, all of them down the list, to the point where the palace had no choice but to admit it. And she herself, as you point out, fell on the sword. Sadly, there's going to be more on that. Okay, wait. It was Ruby Naldret of the Daily Mirror who put that together. Well done, Ruby. That was very interesting to see. Okay, I do want to talk about the Oscars, and I know you do too. Did you watch? And what was your impression?
I watched it in real time, which is
a
specific form of agony. I was thinking about this. This is the entertainment industry's annual tribute to itself, right?
Yes.
How is it the entertainment industry cannot make this broadcast entertaining? it's a slog to get through. The Jimmy Kimmel, just, he was issuing these sort of reheated jokes from earlier ceremonies that never worked in the first place. Like, his Yorgos quip was like an Oprah Uma kind of thing. And then sort of happy, like, oh, this thing is going to go so long. It's already over. We're only 5 minutes in. Every host says that every year. The Barbie stuff was just killing me. It was killing me. And if I had to hear one more time that America Ferrara's soliloquy in Barbie about how hard it is to be a woman, just the thumbnail, if a man does it, he's assertive. If a woman does it, she's a bitch. You know, gold plated since the 70s, we get it, is a soliloquy on par with like to be or not to be. I'm going to throw something. This movie is a mess. It was an infomercial for Mattel. And then we had just the self-regard of these actors coming up and like giving each other awards and, you know, talking as if they've cured cancer. Emma Stone, complete hysterical reaction.
I love you. I love you so much because you say exactly the things that I've been thinking and I need somebody to say. Please keep going.
Well, just to say, like, she's gone hard in the paint for the past 9 months campaigning for this award. Yes. And then she confesses when she's on stage that her own director had to talk her down the night before because she was fretting what would happen if she won, because it was that likely. And then she gets up there and she's crying and she can't pull it together to just say thank you and have a proportionate response. You know, my favorite was watching Annette Bening sitting there looking just like completely unimpressed and like over it and ready to go home. And then on a more serious note, I really wanted to just hit this with you because I don't know if you've had the chance to see The Zone of Interest.
I saw that man's disgraceful acceptance speech.
And it was a disgrace to the movie he made, because that movie's a masterpiece. And I encourage
you. Set it up, Maureen. I don't know if the audience knows. They may not know what we're talking about.
The Zone of Interest.
It's the Holocaust movie.
It's a Holocaust film, and it's unlike anyone that you have ever seen before. It is brilliant. But the director, Jonathan Glazer, who is himself Jewish, in accepting his well-earned reward, got up there and said that he renounced his own Judaism because of October 7th. There was nary a word issued about October 7th. On that stage, even when they wheeled out like Steven Spielberg on the 30th anniversary of Schindler's List. We cannot talk about what's happening in Israel right now. We can only talk about what's happening in Gaza. And the ceremony itself, the broadcast, which was supposed to start at 7, big, you know, deal that they had finally bumped this thing up an hour so people on the East Coast aren't like hungover the next morning. It started late, but they didn't say why. And it started late because pro-Palestinian protesters had blocked the route to the awards ceremony. But they couldn't even acknowledge that. It was just wild.
Here's this guy turning, who made a movie about the Holocaust, who won this best international film for his movie about the Holocaust, who is Jewish, and his acceptance speech in which he tears on Jews in Israel. Watch.
Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all are victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
He refutes his Jewishness. The Holocaust has been hijacked by what's happening in Gaza. I don't even understand it, but I know enough to be offended. I know enough to be insulted by what he's saying.
How about the hostages that are still being held by Hamas? You know, this is the thing that my big takeaway from that evening. Donald Trump is an extinction level event. He is a threat to humanity who must be vanquished at all costs. But Hamas is just kind of like misunderstood. They need better branding, you know, so allow Hollywood to do that for them. It's the strangest thing. I mean, the zone of interest
Pro tip. When Mehdi Hassan is praising your acceptance speech for your Holocaust film, you're doing it wrong. Something's gone very, very, very wrong there. I love what you said about Emma Stone. When she won, my team will back me up. I texted my team and I said, if I were ever to win an award, please remind me to just get up there and say the words, thank you, and then sit down and not pretend that it is like winning a Nobel Peace Prize. Like they're self-congratulatory nature. I mean, it's fine. The arts play a part in our lives and do bring some enjoyment to us. But to pretend like she had just been awarded, you know, the Academy Award for curing cancer, right? With the tears.
I know. I love the movies. I love pop culture. And this is, I think, why I'm really hard on it in some ways, because there's no need for that kind of hysteria. Zero. I mean, right. I loved Robert Downey Jr.'s speech in which he opened by thanking his terrible childhood.
That was
so note perfect. Everybody knows this guy has been through it and everybody was rooting for him. And he did pretty much say, thank you. I mean, he was a little self-important by saying, you know, everything they make matters. Not everything
what we
they
do
matters.
Matters.
It doesn't have to, you know? But the Emma Stone, there's always one every year. There's always one.
I know. It's too much. The best speech ever was the Joe Pesci speech in which he literally just got up there. And I think it was for Goodfellas, for Best Supporting Actor. And I think all he said was, thank you. It's my honor. And sat down.
Well, it's my privilege. Thank you.
Right on, Joe Pesci. Of course, his best movie wasn't Goodfellas. It was My Cousin Vinny. That's a fact.
Agreed.
It's just well known, right? It's well known.
Agreed.
It's accepted. Okay. The media and, you know, fawning over celebrities, they fawn over themselves, and some of their coverage in the media is fawning as well. And this brings me to a New York Times piece on Kate Winslet, which I know is on your radar. Explain why.
Oh my God, I'm so happy you brought this up. I almost forgot because so much has been happening. So I read this Kate Winslet profile in the New York Times Magazine, which even for the New York Times is over the top in its sort of obsequious, you know, veneration of who, listen, good actor, like her stuff. She's an actress. In this piece, we learn that Kate Winslet, probably thanks to her Titanic days, can hold her breath for 7.5 minutes straight underwater. Navy SEAL, you may not know, can only make it to 3. So this is just one assertion that this like hero worshiping, you know, interviewer is just sort of.
Let me read part of it just to back you up. They start off by saying Winslet is not precious or easily rattled. On set over the years, she has broken a toe, suffered hypothermia, and fainted. But very little slows her down when she's shooting. She's not a fan of a lunch break. Goes on about how she's eminently relatable, and then says it was for Avatar, allegedly, that she, after considerable training, managed to hold her breath underwater for an astonishing 7 minutes and 15 seconds, and then points out some Navy SEALs never break 3 minutes. Paging Rob O'Neill, I would like a fact check on whether that's possible, but keep going.
Yes, great point. I would like a fact check too. My favorite part of the interview. She asks what Ozempic is. She says, what Kate is Ozempic? Winslet. Kate Winslet says, what is Ozempic? Sure. And this dummy interviewer is like, oh, you've never heard of Ozempic? It would be like me asking you, like, what does oxygen do? Explain it to me. I don't get it. She's in Hollywood. She's spent the past 2 decades bitching about how her weight is always a topic of conversation with casting directors, how unfair it is. She's so brave. She's doing her L'Oreal ads without airbrushing, you know, but please, okay, whatever. She did Mayor of Easttown.
She admits to having an eating disorder.
Yeah, she says she's had an eating disorder, but she's never heard of Ozempic. And then when the interviewer explains what it is, she says, that's horrible. Let's eat some more stuff, and starts shoving her face with, like, the whole thing is like performance art to the nth degree. I encourage everyone to read it. It's the biggest laugh you'll have all week. I promise.
And is there any chance, I actually read it thinking, is there any chance this New York Times writer, Susan Dominus, is in on it? Like, is there any chance she's espousing like these absurdities to, you know, show us how ridiculous this is?
I think you're more generous than I am. And I don't think she is in on it. And I'll tell you why. Kate Winslet, a multi-millionaire who you might not know, is also married to a relative of Richard Branson, who the piece is only called by his first name, Ned. But Megan, this is a middle-aged man who goes by the name Ned Rock and Roll. So Kate Winslet makes this poor woman conduct this 3-hour-long interview in an uninsulated beach shack on the ocean. Like, you can picture the wind whipping through these wooden slats. And the interviewer writes in the piece, she's freezing and she can't understand why Kate Winslet isn't. But like, it seemed like a weird sort of test. Like, how much would this woman put up with? Because she's spending time with a famous, it was so strange and weird and just like peak New York Times.
It does make me look a little differently at Kate Winslet, who previously I liked and I still like her acting, but it does, you know, I've said many times, and it's what came to mind when I heard this, the 7-foot center doesn't tell you how tall he is. And I don't think if you're super tough, you know, you don't sit there telling the New York Times how tough you are, and you don't take lunch breaks, and you've never said you're cold, and sit out here in this ice shack and listen to me. I can go under this water at any point for 7 minutes and 15 seconds more than the Navy SEAL. Like, that doesn't sound right, but we'll see. Maybe Kate's people will quietly get the word out that it was Susan's doing and not Kate's that all this stuff appeared. Maureen, always a pleasure. God, I love talking to you. Thanks for being here.
Likewise, Megan. Thanks for having me.
Oh, what a show. I absolutely loved every discussion, and I hope you did too. We're back tomorrow with the latest on the Trump trials. See you then. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.